PDM includes four types of dependencies or logical relationships. Ideally, successor activity is dependent on the activity which logically comes after the predecessor activity in schedule. Each activity except the first and the last have behave as a predecessor or a successor at the schedule in the progressing. So four types of logical relationships are explained here. Let's have a look at it. It's called FS. FS is finish to start. When I say finish to start, what do I mean? Successor activity cannot start until predecessor activity is finished, which means second innings of a cricket match cannot start until the first inning is finished. That's FS, that's finish to start. Let's look at finish to finish. Successor activity cannot finish until a predecessor activity is finished. Checking of examination papers cannot finish unless the examination is finished itself. Okay? Let's look at start to start. It talks about successor activity cannot start until a predecessor activity is started. Example, concrete leveling activity cannot start until the concrete pouring is started. So you can't level a concrete unless you pour the concrete. So it's important. So it's start to start. So the moment my concrete is poured, my next start that happens is leveling it. So that's how it is. Finish to start, a very easy one to understand. Successor activity cannot finish until the predecessor activity is finished, which means the first security guard cannot finish his duty until the second security guard has started the shift. So this is start to finish. So these are four types of logical sequencing that's done in predecessor. Let's look at how it is done here. Activity A is FS, which activity A cannot start until the activity B is started. So finish to start, finish until the activity B is started. The next is activity A, which is SS, which is start to start. So these are parallel activities. So moment this starts, this activity B starts. Finish to finish, activity A starts and B starts. So this will finish and simultaneously this will finish. Similarly, start to finish is activity A starts. Activity B cannot finish, cannot start unless this activity is finished. Okay, that's how relationship type of a predecessor in a diagram is checked. Let's have a look at tools and techniques of sequencing. Dependency determination. Dependency is a characteristics by four attributes that are mandatory. Mandatory, discretory, internal, and external. These are four attributes of any dependencies. So, mandatory dependencies will be government regulations. So absolutely mandatory. Discrete could be some bylaws that you use to so that you can work around the dependencies. Internal could be internal as an organization. External could be nature sometimes. External could be customer sometimes. So, mandatory external dependencies are an internal. Internal dependencies and discretely external dependencies and discretely internal dependencies are also a part of it. So, what are mandatory dependencies? I gave you an example very quickly. Let's have a look of what is written on the slide. It says these are the dependencies that are legally and contractually mandatory or inherent in the nature of the work. Mandatory dependencies often involve physical limitations. For example, a chimney erection cannot be started. The foundation has to be built. The project team shall decide the mandatory dependencies during the process of sequencing. So, discretely, let's have a look at it. So in the first one, unless if I want to erect a chimney tower, if a base is not laid, I will not be able to erect it. So, the laying base is a mandate for dependency. Discretely dependencies are based on knowledge of the best practice within a particular application area or some unusual aspects of the project where a specific sequence is designed. In spite of other acceptable sequences, discretely dependencies should be fully documented since they are created arbitrary tool float value and can limit the scheduling option. The project team shall decide the discretely dependencies during the process of sequencing. Now, this depends very, very individually on how the project manager and the project team and how well are they experienced around it. So for a new beginner, constructing a 100 floors building would be very difficult. But for a person who's been doing it for 30 years, maybe it's a little different. So discretionary dependencies for a new beginner would be different than the discretionary dependencies for a person who's more experienced. And hence, at that level, hence the expert judgment always helps you in preparing discretionary dependencies. Dependency determination, external dependencies, and I'll read through this for you. These dependencies are generally beyond the control of the project team. Like, for example, the third requires a testing equipment that is delivered late by an external source, or the hearing of cutting the trees at site is delayed by government agency. The project team shall decide the external dependencies during the process sequencing, which means an approval process by a government is an external dependency. You can't do anything about it. Hence, it has to be scheduled properly or started off parallelly. Internal dependencies. Internal dependencies are created by precedence relationship, a relationship between project activities, and are explained in PDM earlier. And generally are inside of the project team control. For example, if a team cannot proceed with the next step of fabrication until the RT is completed, this becomes an internal mandatory dependency. The project team shall decide its internal dependency during the process sequencing. So, to give you an example of constructing or rather painting a house, I have given you an example around this. Painting a house, unless I remove the old paint, wet my walls, put in my the white cement to it, and then start painting. So my activities cannot start parallelly on the same wall. I have to go step by step, and for that, how the internal dependency is that the white cement will have to be kept normal without touching for 48 hours. So that's an internal dependency. You just can't do anything. That's a mandate dependency. So you got to keep that. If you hamper it, it's going to hamper the quality. So you keep that. But then what you can do is you can parallelly start off peeling off old paint of some other wall. So that's how internal dependencies are managed. Let's look at the lead and lag. The lead and lag is I've already given you information around it. However, I feel we will just read through the slide now so that we can move a little faster around this. Lead and lag are very common, very important features of activities since they decide the overall possible reduction of project cycle. Lead and lag always are considered as the advancement of delay and predecessor activity with respect to successor activity. The project management team shall determine the dependencies that may require lead or lag to accurately define logical relationships. All lead or lag data along with the assumptions should be documented in a format. Let's look at this. What is a lead and lag? For example, it's illustrated in 10.6 figure. I'll just show that to you. The activity of excess material removal from the site can be started in 2 weeks before finish of the activity of completing the punch list on the on-site engineering project. This is indicated in FS, and I'll show the graphical presentation as well. In the graphical presentation, similarly, the activities conducted, a unit test can start only with delay of 15 days from starting the teaching of syllabus. This is indicated as SS, start to start, in the graphical representation. Let's have a look at this. This is what we were talking about. Complete list of punch, FS, start to finish, 2 weeks lead, excess material removal, which means before this activity completes, I can go ahead and start this activity. So I can start removing excess material 15 days before or two weeks before I'm actually completing the completing my project. Similarly, teaching of syllabus of semester cannot complete unless a unit test is conducted. So there will be a delay, a lag of 15 days. Why? Because I have to complete this, give people some time to consume the information, and then conduct a test. So that's how a start to start starts off. Let's look at output of what am I going to get out of the sequencing activity. Project schedule network diagram is an important output of the sequencing process, which means it tells me step by step, box by box information on how my project and what time is, it's going to get completed. So ideally, why do you need to do sequencing? It clearly defines the question of an answer called when. When my task is going to be completed. And important is what milestones am I going to achieve in that. So let's look at this, and I'll read you through the slide. Project schedule network diagram is an important output of a sequencing process. These diagrams are the graphical representation of the activities which will be used in terms of software and schedule. The project management software available to build a faculty to generate a network diagram, the summary narrative to explain the basic approach of sequencing will help you to understand the network diagram generated. So I'll show you the figure. Of course, the sample project schedule network diagram is provided. The following project documents are needed to be updated. So what's that? I will have a now on the activity list, I will have the time that's going to complete it and the logical sequence. I will have the activity attribute, which means why it has to be completed that way. I will have a milestone of what are the, how do I understand that it's getting completed. And I'll update it into a risk register so everybody knows where are we going and heading towards. So that's a network diagram ideally. You begin here, which is you begin here, and then this activity A starts, B starts, C starts, H, so A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, and then my project ends. So if you look at it, there are three major activities that are A, H, and K become major activities. I have B to C is SS, is start to start, which means they can start parallelly. FS is finish to start, which means I have a delay of 15 days. SS plus 10 is, you know, start to start, which means activity H and activity I can actually start together. And I have a you know, I have a lead of 10 days here. And then is how I create a critical path. We will talk about what is a critical path of any project. So this is how a network diagram looks like in the process. Let's look at the tools and techniques, some more. Assignment duration of resources. Assigning a duration to and a resource of assigning the duration and resource is process of compiling and assigning all the attributes, and activity duration and resource are the important attributes that decide the quality, cost, time taken by the project outputs. These, after estimation and sequencing, 100% data for assignment is available for us. Let's look at some more understanding around it. All project management softwares demand these assignments before developing the project schedule. Start. Any inaccurate or incorrect assignment can have large impact on the complex project and multiple activities and work packages. This in turn may lead to integration and interfacing issues, and hence the assignment accuracy is a key generator for generating accurate project schedule. Step 5 is developing. Now I will now have everything around, and now I have to create a plan around it. I have the sequence of it. I know who's going to do it, how it's going to be done, what I have the definitions of it. I have a WBS dictionary around it. I have a RBS around it, which is the resource breakdown structure. Now I have to develop a schedule plan. So development of a schedule, project schedule, is the process that analyzes the data assigned, such as activity duration, schedule, my dependencies, my schedule constraints, and generate the project schedule model with planned dates for completing the project. So what are the schedule management plan will have? It will have my activity list, as I told you, attributes, my milestones, my network diagram, my resource requirement, my resource calendar, my activity duration estimates, scope statement, risk register, project team assignment details, my resource breakdown structure, my organizational policies, PMIS, which is my project management information software, communication channel, scheduling methodology, tools and templates, and historical information. So these are things that I will get for my schedule management plan. This takes us to the fifth step. We're talking about the tools and techniques of developing a project schedule. So I'll read through what we've written on the slide. It talks that the project development is in two-phase process. During the first phase, a project schedule model is generated by using inputs mentioned above. This may not match with the overall project plan and project objective. So second phase is about analyzing the schedule model by using various techniques such as CPM, CCM, and resource optimization, etc. Of course, we will talk about these models as well. Modeling technique are used to simulate and analyze the what-if scenarios. Lead lag with advanced scheduling tools are used to refine compression and schedules. Schedule network diagram, as mentioned above, schedule network diagram is a technique that generates the project schedule model, for which I need to clearly define in my softwares or clearly define the resource allocation and their strengths and the skills that they can provide, which hence that has to be an accurate data. With the use of various technique methods above the early and late start of finish dates of the activities, work packages of an uncompleted portion of a project are calculated. So there would be lot of activities in my projects that I can't package into some kind of thing. Ideally, while we create a budget, if you remember, we have something called as miscellaneous, which cannot be tagged into anything. So that is what we get calculated. The analysis may reveal some points of conversion and divergence of the network point. This information is used for schedule compression and other further analysis. Now, when I say schedule compression, what do I mean by that? We all would want to compile and create projects in faster way. Okay, why? Because time is as accurate as money. So if I can do some activity, if the defined is I can do an activity in say 6 months, the project manager's job post this analysis is, can I make it in 5.5 months? Can I do it in 5 months? If he's able to achieve the same productivity in 5 months, why do I need to invest the last month into it? So this is where my compression starts in, and I try to compress and make things happen parallelly while I'm working on that project. So that takes us to the next aspect of it. We're talking about creating a critical path method. In the diagram, if you go behind and if you look at it, in this diagram, I told you that I will tell you about a critical path, and this is where we're talking on the critical path aspect of it. So, what is a critical path method? It's to give you a very simple and a basic example around it. Critical path is a path which is the lifeline or the heartline of the project. All right, so here we are on critical path method. If you realize I showed you in the last slide that in the network diagram, I will always have a path that is the most important path for my projects to get completed and to be on time. So as a project manager, my complete focus should be on my critical path. Let's look at this, what's written on the slide. It says critical path method is the method used to estimate the minimum project duration and assess the amount of scheduling flexibility on the logical network path within the schedule model. This technique calculates the early start and early finish, late start and late finish dates for all the activities without consideration the resource limitations by performing a forward-backward pass analysis through network or to schedule network. The sequence with the longest path of a logical schedule diagram. So if you remember, the longest path is the critical path, and since it determines the shortest possible duration of a project to get completed, because it is the longest path and that's the shortest duration of the project getting completed. For better understanding, we have an example on next slide, and on any other network part, this schedule flexibility is measured by the amount of time that the schedule activity can be delayed or extended from the early start date without delaying the project finish date or violating the schedule constraints, as is called total float. Now, so whatever is the rest remaining is called a total float. So it's possible that one of the activities I am doing it at 10 days, it might take 8 days. The same activity might take 12 days. So that limitation float, that's the flexibility I have in my schedule. However, my critical path does not change, because if my critical path changes, it's going to hamper my schedule of the project for the next part. So let's look at what a CPM is, a critical path method is. Critical path method is normally characterized by zero total float on the critical path, which means this path does not have the float. This path does not have a buffer. And any activity on a critical path is called a critical path activity. ideally called as a critical activity. Critical path activity is a derived from PDM, precedence diagram, precedence diagram method, if you realize that. So critical path activities are all those activities which have to be completed in the desired duration by the resources who have defined it. Now, any dip down in a critical path will give us have a risk involved into it, which might have a long lasting impact on my project. It might lot of times these are the reasons why, if you remember in the stakeholder management, we understand what are the reasons of project fizzing out. This is could be the one of the reasons why the project fizzes out. Why? Because the stakeholders lose interest if the critical path is not achieved on time. So, schedule network may have multiple nearby near critical path. Many software packages available allow the project team define, adjust the activity attributes such as duration, logical relationships, lead lag, and other schedule constraints to generate a critical path with zero or positive total float. After calculating the total float of a network diagram, the free float of an activity in a critical path can be determined. The free float is an amount of time which a scheduled activity can be delayed without delaying the early start of any successor activity or violation of the schedule constraint. Let's look at this slide. It will give us a complete definition of how a critical path method is done. So, I have start of activity 1 and I have 1, 5 and 5. I have start of activity 2, which is 6, 5 and 10. These are activity numbers, by the way. So plan is A, B and D. So A, B and D is 16 plus 5 plus 30. These are number of days that are going to be required. So if I look at calculate all this, this is the finish time. If I have a critical path which talks about A, C and D, it has 30. Which means, what is the critical path? My critical path is the shortest time that is required to complete my project without hampering my finish date. So critical path is the blue line that we're talking about. So this, unless A, C and D is done on time, my project will not be able to get completed. Now if you look at it, early start, duration, early finish is the activity name, last date, total float and last finish. That's how these numbers are defined here. And so my critical path and my non-critical path, here I will have some buffer in activity B. Maybe I can delay or proceed that by some days, but in this I can't play anything around. So in this I have to complete this activity, which means activity B and C can also be run parallelly for that matter to ensure that the time is done. In this example, the longest path includes activity A, C and D, and hence sequence of A, C, D is a critical path. Free float activity B is 5 days. So this, if you look at it, this is the free float. Total float we have 5, so that's a 5 days. Here if you notice, you see the 0 and hence it becomes a critical path. This takes us to the critical chain method, CCM. It's an extension of CPM, of course. Critical chain method is technique consider the effect of resource allocation, resource optimization, resource leveling, and activity duration uncertainty of a critical path defined by CPM, and allows the project team to place a buffer on the project schedule path to account for limited resource and project uncertainties. The resource constrained critical path is known as critical chain. Duration buffer added at the CCM are non-work schedule activities to manage uncertainties. Next figure to tell you what it is. One buffer placed at the end of a critical chain is called as the project buffer or protect failure on target finish date. Date along the critical chain. So which means, say I consider 100 days is required to complete my project, I place a 10% buffer on it which says 110 days. So that's my positive buffer that I have, which I have early decided based on all the calculations, and I've added 10 more days to it. Additional buffer known as feeding buffer, that's also called as feeding buffer. That feeding buffer at critical times can give you a way of handling your project in a limited time. your stakeholders know about it, your customers know about it, your internal stakeholders know about it. So it's important that you keep pushing everything as your project team within 100 days. However, it is critical that you have those 10 days in buffer. That's what is written. Once the buffer schedule activities are determined, the planned activities are scheduled to their latest possible planned start and finish dates. The CCM focuses on managing the remaining buffer duration against the remaining duration of the chain of the activities, whereas CPM manages the total flow of the network path. This is basically the diagram of how we have illustration of a critical chain. If you look at it, a critical chain is marked in blue, which means if I start activity B, activity C, and activity A. So activity A, B, and C, if you look at C, E, F, G become my critical path. This is my feeding buffer. This is my feeding buffer. So whatever time is required to get from D till F and from A to F, whatever duration, so this becomes my feeding buffer for my non-critical path. However, my critical path and critical chain remains this on the illustration that's been provided for you. One buffer placed at the end of the critical chain is called as the project buffer, and project failure on target finish date along the critical path. Additional buffer, knowing as feeding buffer, are placed at each point where the chain is dependent activity feeding feeds into a critical chain and protects the failure on critical chain along the feeding chain. Now, what do I mean by critical chain and feeding chain? So we have critical activities and non-critical activities. I'll give you a government example. If I have to license few things from government, and the TAT that's been governed, the turnaround time that's been given by the government authorities is 90 days. I will take those 90 days into my critical path. However, I will add more 30 days to it, considering that it is, the dependency is high. There's nothing in my control. So I got to have it done in 90 days, but I still have a buffer of 30 more days, which means the total float that I have around the activity is 30 days. So similar activities, I have a buffer at every point, and that becomes my total float of the critical path. Let's move on to the other part of it. Additional buffer, known as feeding buffer, are placed at few, you know, each point. And that's what I said. So each dependent point, so that it gives me a float, it gives me a little bit flexibility, and I don't have crushed timelines to achieve my project, because crushed timelines sometimes might also deteriorate the quality of your product or services that you're trying to deliver through the project. Developing a project schedule, tools and techniques is resource optimization. Resource optimization is can I get my resource parallelly working? Can I get him working for specific tasks? And a lot of other things we will have a look at. The resource optimization technique is used to adjust the schedule model to cater the demands and supply of resources. Commonly used resources optimization techniques are elaborated below. So one is resource leveling. What do we mean by resource leveling? It means for resource leveling technique, the start and finish dates are adjusted on basis of the resource constraints with an object of balancing the resource demand against availability. Now, what do I mean by this? I mean that I look at the availability of my resource and then allocate the task to that resource, rather than first allocating the task and then deciding when is he available. So I will first go. So this doesn't become, this is no crucial when it comes to have a full-time employee, but it is crucial when you have consultants working with you, when you have part-time people working with you, when you have hourly people working with you, and typically from the labor point of view as well. Resource leveling will be very useful where the resources are shared or availability are certain times. In limited quantities or overlocated, resource leveling often can change the critical path, usually to increase. We'll have a reference point of an example around it as well. So resource smoothing. What do you mean by resource smoothing? Resource smoothing techniques adjust the activities of the schedule model in such a way that the resource requirement doesn't exceed certain predefined limits. A critical path remains unchanged in this case of resource smoothing, but the activities may get delay within their free or total float. Thus, project completion date may not be delayed by resource smoothing, but it may not be able to optimize all the resources. So understand the first part of it, where it is written, is as a predefined policy, I have these things, skill sets available, and employee is one of a resource smoothing process. So people hire people, full-time job is a resource smoothing process in a project. Let's look at how the activity resourcing is done and how leveling is done. If you look at activity 1, we have, say, certain hours. Activity B, we have certain hours. And activity C, we have certain hours. Day 1, day 2, day 3. So I will have day 3, I will have a set individual working. B and A will have different individual working. So 16 hours, 8 hours, 0 hours. So I will require resource at activity C only for 8 hours and not for 16 hours. Activity below leveling, before after leveling, is this. So activity 1, it's 1 day and it's going to take 8 hours. Activity B is going to take 8 hours and activity C is going to take 8 hours. So in this, I have a segregation of 3 days. Here I have a segregation of 2 days, but 16 hours is the utilization. So as the figure illustrated, the welding equipment is available for 8 hours, but was allocated for 16 hours on day 1 before resource leveling. In order level, the allocation is revised to 8 days hours for 3 days. So that's how resource allocation is done. So machine is a resource here, and I've allocated it simultaneously for 8 hours per day. Let's look at the other technique, which is called as the modeling technique. Modeling technique includes but are not limited to what-if scenarios only. What-if scenario analysis is what-if. I mean, that's a game that we generally would want to play while we're doing a lot of brainstorming also. So this is a process of evaluating scenarios in order to predict their effect positively or negatively on the project objectives. A schedule network analysis is performed, updating the schedule to compute different scenarios such as delaying of major components delivery, exceeding specific engineering duration, or introducing an external factor such as strike or some change in the licensing process. Outcome of what if is always impact that I might have, and how can I mitigate if there is an impact around it, or how can I transfer that. Simulation is very simple. Simulation calculates the multiple project duration against different set of activities assumptions by using probability distribution that we've spoken in chapter number 9 in Monte Carlo method.